This is Andy.
And this is Matt.
And you're listening to
The Hop Podcast with No Name.
What a dumb name.
It's so stupid. We are beginning. I was going to say, and we're off, and it just didn't feel right. And so we're start. This is the start. Start episode 53. Go. Here we are. This is how it begins. All right. So we are.
You're nailing it.
Yep. That's right. Thank you for the confidence as we begin recording. This is going to be great. We are continuing our conversation about what those in senior leadership can do as this hop stuff takes hold.
Is that how we're summarizing it?
Yeah, great. I think that's actually how I summarized it in the description. I don't think you ever read my descriptions when I post these. So now you know. That's it. That's how it starts.
Yeah, so we are trying to offer whatever little advice we can if somebody is in a leadership position where they can actually make a holistic plan of how to try to adopt hop concepts. Like what have we seen in terms of what the steps to those plans are and what seems to work well.
And we're calling this step two, although really it's step three because there's a step zero. but it's important to call out that while we're outlining it step by step, we have talked to organizations, I think, that have started at any one of these as the first step.
Correct.
Yeah, and so this is
not this nearly as linear as... Yeah,
this is like our dream scenario we're giving you, kind of an ideal way to do it.
Yeah. So if you haven't heard the last two episodes before this, highly suggest listening to them so the rest of the conversation makes sense. Step zero was about the shift in an individual's beliefs that would need to happen so that we know what we're actually using hop to solve for. And then last episode was about step one, which is the fact that that then has to be a widely held conversation about the shift in belief. And as people are shifting their thought process, then the type of information or data that we're looking to collect is going to naturally shift, as well as the things that we're curious about or interested in from this leadership level. So the types of questions we're going to ask and be interested in people knowing the answer to is also going to shift. So that was step one. And now step two, which I guess I feel like the piece we're really missing is how do you make any of what we just talked about into some sort of cohesive plan? If you were going to put together, for example, a PowerPoint presentation on this shift in plan, what does it look like? Like, what are the discrete elements of what you're proposing shifts?
Which is that fair? Now we're talking my language, because I think a majority of the emails that I've sent, either personally or professionally, include bullet points, because that's how my mind works. So talking about how it'd be a PowerPoint presentation is, now we're cooking. This is what I like to hear.
Yeah. Okay. So PowerPoint presentation, slide one is
probably your name about... and what you're here to talk about. Okay. Got it. That is slide one.
Okay. So slide two, is a
table of contents.
About...
All right, slide three. Let's go.
Slide three. It is a statement about the shift in belief. Specifically, you're saying this is historically what we've been solving for, and this is what we are trying to solve for now. And then the why. The why is the foundational belief statement around the imperfection of people, process, tools. And so therefore, the way that we are solving things must change. The data that we can use to show that is the lack of relationship between TRIR and serious events occurring. There is a pretty good paper published about that if you need a discrete piece of paper, a report to show it. And Matt, maybe in the comments we can link to it. That's slide one is the, this is why we're doing it. This is the beliefs change. Or slide, what do we say? Slide three.
Slide three. Slide three. Get it right, please.
Slide three. Okay. Okay. Slide four then becomes the initial steps to the plan. The first step is that we have to find a group to socialize this with. And that can either be at two different levels, depending upon, I mean, I guess how confident you are as an individual in the direction you want to take your organization. Meaning, step one is either socializing these concepts directly with the board or with the senior executive level and getting buy-in that this, as the organization, is the direction that we want to take things in. And this is just what we're doing. We're making this decision as a group of people. This is the direction we're going. That's option one. Option two, sometimes the precursor to option one, is to socialize it instead with a subsection of the organization as a pilot. So we're going to pilot the thought process. So I guess you have to make a decision. Are we going big? And we're saying, hey, we have enough data, enough understanding, enough belief that this is the right thing to do, that we just want to shift everyone. Or are we saying we really actually want to have some proving ground for ourselves, and instead we want to focus on a pilot area? So I guess that is slide four, bullet point one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep me honest, Matt.
That's fair. That's fair.
Constructive.
I think that that seems like a pretty common split that we hear as well as to what happens next.
Yeah. So then depending upon the direction that we're going, if we're going board, senior executive level, this is the direction we want to go. Then at that point in time, the beliefs conversation has to happen with those individuals, right? To actually create that shared vision of the direction that we want to go. Once that vision, if it is created of this is the direction we want to go, well, then we have to be able to, from that level, trigger a change for the rest of the organization. And so most often that change comes from a change in what we're measuring. Organizations will tie the change in what they're measuring also to their bonus structure so that people understand that this is important enough that we're wrapping around our bonus structure around this as well. Most organizations have some sort of target around lack of injuries or lack of environmental events wrapped around their bonus structure. And then in this change, they actually move from that being the target to something along the lines of the ability to understand, mitigate things that could have serious consequence or fatality. How you choose to pick that metric, obviously entirely up to the own organization. We mentioned in the last episode, you can look at that reactively or proactively. If you had to choose, I would absolutely choose both, but lean towards the proactive side of things, where your metric is around people's ability to learn and make improvements to the mitigation structure of things that they are understanding in their organization that could have potentially really high consequence. And that on the reactive side is often around events that we label PSIF. And on the proactive side is often around things that we would consider critical to safety rules or life-saving rules or things like permitting processes. So that is, what is that? That is slide four, bullet point three.
I think it's two or three, depending on.
Two or three.
Yeah. This somehow linear. I'm just going to say this now. I'm not going to make these slides. So if anyone's hearing this and they're like, I'm going to follow along. Sorry. Not going to happen. But keep going. This is somehow a lot of bullet points and a lot of slides, but coming together.
So if we then change this metric and, you know, if we're at a place that we're actually changing our bonus structure, well, then we also have to give people the ability to achieve that metric, which means that we then at some, if you're doing it for the whole organization, large scale, need to introduce several different things. One is the thought process itself, like the belief system around people being imperfect, right? The understanding that blaming an individual or the last person that touched something is not the same thing as putting in a systemic improvement or making sure that a process is more user-friendly. We've listed off these ideas many, many times, so I won't do it again, but the thought process itself would have to be introduced to a very large group of leaders if you want to do this all at the same time. And hopefully with the ability for them to push back. Because as we mentioned in the last episode, if you just go tell people this is what we're doing, you tend to get a lot of like lip service and people that can speak this, you know, sort of hoppy language. But the thought process itself actually hasn't changed, which means you end up really having to dictate every action you want an individual to take in order to align with the thought process. And there's a lot of sort of disjointed belief systems around the goal of the organization and why we're doing this and whether or not it feels like the right thing to do. All of that remains hidden as opposed to being able to openly discuss it and address people's concerns or thought process around it.
Which I will just throw in to give you a break to get your breath. I will just throw in that I probably say this every episode, maybe every other episode. It's when we are giving lip service, one of the easiest ways to see that is the more severe the outcome could have been, the fact that it is more difficult to apply a new thought process to it. I think we feel that fairly often. So if there's a lot of lip service going on and people haven't changed their thoughts at a leadership level, when something could have had a high consequence, it's very easy to fall back into the old routine.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's good way to look out for it if the change is just at a lip service level.
Which, I mean, to your point, Matt, actually kind of defeats the entire purpose of this whole concept, right?
Yeah.
Because the things that we are most curious and most concerned about are the things with the potential for the highest consequence. And if we don't adjust our thought process there, well, then we kind of defeated the entire idea of why we're doing it to begin with.
But I think, unfortunately, we hear that most often.
Yeah, I don't disagree. Yeah, the higher the consequence feels, the more often we see people slip into whatever was comfortable historically in terms of response to something because it feels safer to do. Feels more comfortable. So feels just, more familiar.
That's the lip service litmus test, as they say. I think that's trademarked. Now that was So I think it's just a good way to tell. That's how you check.
Okay, so now we've introduced the thought process to a large group of people in a way that they're able to push back on it, that they're able to have engaging dialogue. A lot of organizations call that introducing HOP foundations, or they call it building HOP fluency. But really what it looks like on paper is a large scale training discussion with senior leaders and the folks that report to them that go in depth in these concepts in order to build enough momentum to continue to move in the direction so that the shift in strategy isn't jarring. That then allows those senior leaders to have discussions with their not only counterparts, but the people that report to them to back up why there's a shift. So when you picture training your organization, I wouldn't say you have to train every single person, right? You're not thinking the entire organization has to go into this in-depth thought process. The higher somebody up in a leadership team is, the more they need depth of knowledge because they are actually, they're the ones leading this shift in thought. And they have to be able to speak to it. And so being able to speak to it then requires wrestling with it. So then they can speak to you at a local level, why there's a shift, what the change is, what it looks like. Once we have some folks bought in, if you're picturing the whole organization, which is a really hard lift, but a lot of people thinking this way, then we have to make sure that people can tangibly execute the changes that you're asking them to execute. And the most large change, or the largest shift, is the way that we would be gathering information, both proactively and reactively, because we're no longer in this space seeing non-compliance as the end goal of what we're trying to find. Instead, something like an event or non-compliance with a rule that is actually, that's just a symptom. And in order to understand what is happening behind the scenes, to either have that be the tangible output you're seeing, or have that be the symptom of deeper problems that you're seeing, then we would have to have people be able to have a conversation in a way that is generally fairly foreign in organizations. The reason it's foreign is because it's not a linear root cause analysis, which we're actually pretty good at in organizations. Instead, it is a discussion that is far more accepting of complexity and variability, understands that complexity and variability is part of real work, and invites people to teach that, meaning the end user to teach it to you. So in this space, that's called operational learning, and it can be used proactively or reactively in order to understand the health of your system. If lean concepts are something that are more familiar to you, picture it as creating a ad hoc current state value stream map for a part of a process or the execution of something, with all the nitty gritty, ugly details of not the utopia of what we want on paper, but with all of the real life difficulties, confusion, problems that go along with any work process. So we would need a group of people in the organization that have the ability to operationally learn and know what that looks like, have practice with using the concepts, and also understand the barriers to being able to use it, like our own biases in terms of if we're seeing things as person problems or system problems. So that would have to be bullet point 5 on page 4. And I nailed it, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yep. Totally. Yeah.
And that's your prerequisite to being able to do something different, right? So all of what we've just said, that is the we're going to physically now do something differently with the change that we've made. So we've shifted our thought process. We've gotten people to a place where they are comfortable and they're practiced with operational learning. Now we need to go tangibly do something different with that. And that's when we start thinking about changing one or multiple of our current management systems to align with this, to enable people to physically go do something differently. A simple example is we're going to change how we audit to life-saving rules, or we're going to change the way that we're gathering information around anything that historically needed a permit, or we're going to change the way that we are talking to people and how we're learning post-event, or we're going to change the way we are auditing to compliance requirements. It, depending upon the metric that you've chosen, one or multiple of those elements are going to make sense for you to use more than others. If I had to pick, like if I was the, you know, in charge of my own organization and got to pick anything without any other ramification, no strings attached, the things I would be most interested in doing are changing how we proactively learn about things that have the potential for high consequence. So that would probably be some sort of audit process that we'd be changing. And I'd also be really interested in how we're learning when we have near misses or events, right? So that would be changing our incident management system, right? If I had those two things, that's where I would start if I could start anywhere.
Which is interesting, because you just said, hey, this is where I would start. And we're 19 minutes into this conversation. It was necessary to build up to get there.
This is where I would middle.
I just think that I want to put some of this in perspective, because I mean, it's, we've talked about it over three episodes, but this is not a week after a senior leader has heard this for the first time, right? Can we give some sort of time scale? Obviously, it is super relevant to the individuals, the company size, their propensity for change. There's a lot that goes into it, but I feel like as organizations, or at least as senior leaders, our question has always been, I decided, yes, this is what I want to do, so I want it done tomorrow. And so I would just, I think it's good to give some sort of
time scale.
Yeah.
And I don't know that people will love the time scale that we've seen, but I will be as transparent with my memories of it as possible. From understanding the concept, like as an individual who has the actual ability to change something like a management system or propose a new metric to the board, from the beginning of being exposed to these concepts through being able to even bring it to the board, the fastest I've heard of somebody doing it is a year. So just, I mean, maybe there's somebody out there that's done it faster, but going to a conference, sort of understanding the concept, thinking about how it's going to apply to my organization, benchmarking with other organizations that are already doing it, having the internal argument with myself about making such a large change, reflecting on events that have happened and whether or not this thought process could have been helpful then. The only time that I've seen an exception to that is if something horrible has happened, right? So there was a moment that required change. And in that moment, an individual capitalized on the ability to change something quickly, or they themselves were just looking for an answer and decided that this was the direction they were going to go in, sort of just needing something different. But if there's nothing that's happened, a year.
And I think, and that's, I'll put it some more context from what I've seen behind it, is just because it never stops. It being work, right? So it's a year, right? Because we have so much on our plates, and this takes a lot of time and energy, and it's not, we don't have infinite time, infinite energy.
Yep. Now, if you want to then go from the individual who's wrestled through this thought process, and then you've decided that you're ready to, I mean, put a bit of your career behind it, right? Like you're going to make a change, then to convince other people around you that this is the direction to go, several months of even just getting permission to do something different, or finding enough advocates that are your peers around you that are like, yeah, this makes sense to do. Now we have the meeting, right? We have a meeting with the board. The board buys in to all the hard work that we put, you know, a year and a half behind to say, this is what we're going to do. This is why we think there's a need for change. This is the metric that we're planning on using. This is the, you know, past data that we pulled to support this. Now we go to, hey, we want to enable the organization to be ready for this change. So now we need to teach, if we're, you know, picturing it from this perspective of trying to do the whole organization at the same time, we need to teach everyone, let them wrestle with it. That phase of it, I mean, eight months is the fastest that I've seen an organization. I don't know. Does that sound right, Matt? Because you've done this a few times with large groups.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. 8 months to get people introduced to the concepts and wrestling with it. Now you want to take a subset of those folks and get them really good at operational learning. That part, the training for it, isn't hard. It's the practicing it that becomes hard. So people will come back to us after being trained on it and say, you know, within 6 months, they've done several different operational learning opportunities or learning teams. So 3 to 6 months, we see people, if they start to use the concepts pretty regularly, feel pretty confident with being able to use it. So by the time we're ready to actually allow people to tangibly change, like on a large scale, what we're looking at and how we're asking questions in terms of changing those management systems themselves, we're already a couple of years in before the management systems themselves start to change.
Yeah, I think that's necessary perspective.
Yeah.
Because I think it's easy to get excited about this. And that it is such a deeply, you know, beliefs-based change that it takes time. It takes energy. Which isn't just, and we're also describing turning the whole giant cargo ship around, right?
Correct.
We're talking about moving an entire organization around.
Yeah.
Right?
Which is why the piloting option for many people makes more sense to them, because it doesn't feel like such a big lift. We're not going to, meaning instead of saying as the entire organization, we're signaling this change and everyone's going to try to change at the same time. The piloting option is the one that is far more often used.
Yeah.
And doesn't feel nearly as scary, which means that basically page 4 of the PowerPoint presentation would change, right? Because we would be taking the same concepts that we've just talked about, but scaling it to a much smaller scale. And you can move much faster with a pilot than you can trying to have the whole organization move, which is probably where we should go. The next episode is like, continue this plan, but instead of thinking about it from the large shift from the entire organization, picture the same theoretical PowerPoint presentation from the piloting option.
Yeah, we could take the idea we're giving a senior leader's perspective and say, what if that senior leader was just a site leader? And what would it be like to pilot it there?
Sure. Or even as the senior leader, you've decided, hey, yeah, we're not going to try to shift this all at once. We're gonna do it strategically, sort of by location.
Yes.
What does that look like?
Yeah, I think it'll give good perspective as to what it's like to give it a shot.
Yeah. Cool.
Awesome. Well, that's it. It's a bit of a long one again. I think we need to...
No, but I set a timer for myself this time so that I wouldn't just ramble for forever without having any idea how long we've been talking.
I'm acknowledging that you are showing me a timer, because if I didn't, no one would know what you're... we'll take your word for it. Sure. You put a timer on. Okay. Everyone, thanks for listening. We'll talk again soon.
Well, that's it.
Yep. Another one in the books. We did it.
If you want to send us any of your thoughts, actually fling us any of your thoughts, you can do so at the website www.hoppodcast.com.
That's hoppodcast.com.
It's still such a stupid name.
We look forward to hearing from you. Thanks for listening.